You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Recorded in Chicago, Illinois, with your hosts, Ken, Matt, Neil, and Jeff, this is Triviality.
Hello, and welcome to Triviality, the game where lack of seriousness meets
a little bit of knowledge.
Hey, everybody got teamwork. It, except for Matt.
Hi, welcome to Trivia. Oh, sorry.
Matt was on
a little bit of lag there. A little lag on the
huge amount of lag. Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. We're here in the studio. This is our third episode without Matt in the studio. We're just going to keep saying it until we beat that dead horse.
I think we beat the dead horse last time he moved.
The horse is already in the bed of a mafioso, so it's been
that
dead.
It's just going to be important to mark when it's been more episodes of me not in the studio than me in the studio, and I think we're getting close, because there's like 2 years.
I would have to think. Yeah.
I think so, and Ken, you came up with a great idea today, which we'll probably be formulating right after we record this, and which means by the time this comes out, it'll probably be done, which is ranking the episode title names.
Yeah. So I'd like to maybe do like 10 at a time. Mm-hmm. We pick the top of each like set of 10 in order. And then we'll do a bracket.
That sounds good.
For the people to vote on.
Yeah, so we'll do a Google form or something. You can fill it out. We'll do a certain number of time, like a month or something, and then we'll have a bracket for, I don't know, the holidays.
Yeah. Just which names tickle you.
That sounds good. Literally.
You know which episode really tickled me? Episode 134, The Sting.
The Sting. It was one of our...
Personally, that's an episode I would just like to stay inside. You know, just stay inside that episode. Just stay in there. Don't leave the episode.
Well, there's no Matt in that episode. But we have Matt here today because the reason we want to stay in that episode forever, we loved it so much because our friend Bryden Coverdale was on that episode. You may know him from The Chase Australia, known as The Shark. But he's not only here as a listener of Triviality, a Patreon supporter, which we appreciate, but he's got a brand new book out called The Quizmasters, Inside the World of Trivia Obsession and $1 Million Prizes. Our friend Bryden, how are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Three years it's been since I was on the show.
Unbelievable.
Doesn't feel that long.
Yeah, nothing happened in between, so.
Yeah, right.
nothing happened in between,
except time.
For pretty much everything that could possibly have happened. You know?
And you said your new kid was born around the time that you did the original episode, so you always have that as a timestamp.
Yeah, that's right. It was I had two kids at the time, and the third was on the way, not literally, but very close to it. So I can remember exactly when it was that we recorded that.
And what was it like having the two best days of your life right next to each other?
Well, I don't know. It might get usurped by today. Let's see. Let's just wait.
All right. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, that's a great way to go about it. So for people who don't know you, I know I said a couple of things up at the top, and we're super excited about your book. We have it on its way to the studio to live here with us so we can look at your mug every day, every time we record. But tell people a little bit more about you and what the book's about.
Yeah, so I'm from Melbourne in Australia. Sort of a quiz and trivia nut from way back. I went on a lot of shows as a contestant in my youth, and then the last 7 years it's been now, been one of the chasers on The Chase Australia. I can't believe that's been going for 7 years. So I've now got a book out just in the last few months called The Quizmasters, which is, it sort of tells part of, you know, my story about, you know, all the different shows I've been on, the wins, the losses, you know, the behind the scenes stuff on game shows, and a lot of the same sort of shows that you have in the US, like, you know, Weakest Link, Millionaire, Wheel of Fortune, all those sorts of shows. But it's also, I don't know, a lot of your listeners might have read Ken Jennings wrote a book called Brainiac some years ago, which in which he sort of went around and interviewed different people in different parts of trivia. So it's similar in that sense as well. I interview a lot of, you know, either people who have won big or lost big, or you know, there's a chapter about pub trivia, a chapter about Trivial Pursuit and how that came to be. So just covers all sorts of parts of trivia, and there's lots of like little footnoted, you know, facts and quirky facts and questions that you can play along with as you go. So yeah, I hope people enjoy it. I think it'll be up your listeners' alley.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. And your nickname on the show is the Shark. So what kind of shark would you be is the question. What are we looking at here?
Well, I'm tempted to say hammerhead, but I don't know what that says about me.
That sounds good. I like that. Yeah. No, I like that choice.
I like the
choice
idea
that a 7-year-old would make. I was always thinking hammerhead when I was a child.
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean,
it's nice to keep that childlike sense of wonder, right?
Yeah. How many animals have, you know, a head shaped like a hammer? It's pretty unique. Yeah.
Well, you're the shark, so me and Neil teaming up today, we're going to be the minnows because we're not looking hopeful here. Right?
That's right. That's right.
And our competitors, Jeff and Matt, are going to be what?
The Jets.
The Jets, because that makes sense. All right. So any preference on the rules read?
Look, I'd like a bit of Gilbert Gottfried if you've got him.
Got Gilbert two episodes in a row,
two
right?
Two in a row, yeah.
Nice. All right. Let's bring the back classics. The Gil.
Triviality Podcast is two rounds of 20 questions worth 10 points apiece. At halftime, there's a special swing round by this week's host. In the final round, players wager points they've earned for a chance to become the cream of the crop.
The cream of the crop.
All right, there it was. I think we're ready to play.
I think so. I think we're excited, Bryden. You got the ingredients. The cake batter has been put together. It's time to bake.
No.
Here's another catchphrase.
For reference, I tried a random catchphrase out last week, and it was a huge success, so I tried a new one today.
Rousing this success.
Neil, this is not the promised land.
All right, shake and bake, baby. Let's go.
All right, let's bake this thing. All right. Round one, question one. There she goes again. Despite her long and illustrious career, which 2018 film marked the first time Meryl Streep had ever appeared in a film sequel?
So as much as I want this to be Sophie's choice.
Two. Mm-hmm. The choicening.
Is it, was she in both Mamma Mias?
I believe the plural to Mamma Mia is Mamma Mia.
Mama's Mia.
Mama's Mia.
Mama's Mia.
Like Attorneys General.
Right.
Was there a Devil Wears Prada sequel?
I do not believe there was a Devil Wears Prada sequel.
Devil Wears Prado, where she takes down the counterfeit Prada.
Mamma Mia sounds good to me because I don't have anything better, so we'll lock in with
I that. Don't either.
We need the subtitle, please, of Mamma Mia 2.
Really?
No, I don't know. It's not to Brighton.
No, I'm going to pay that. The correct answer is Mamma Mia. Here we go.
Here we go again. That's what I would have guessed. Yeah.
The category name was There She Goes Again, so there was a little.
Was that a Tal Bachman reference?
I hope so.
No, it wasn't. There She Goes was
Cranberries. No,
Sixpence.
Sixpence, None the Richer. I think you're right.
Oh, There She Goes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Meryl Streep. I guess she just has so many offers for acting roles that she doesn't really need to do sequels. But for some reason, she agreed to do a small cameo, at least in the second Mamma Mia. So. All right. Question two, category is checkmate. In 2008, chess legend Bobby Fischer died in which country that had granted him citizenship in 2005? It was the same country in which he had beaten Boris Spassky in a famous 1972 match that had been billed as a Cold War confrontation. Don't know about the war, but it would have been cold.
All right. I think we can lock in if you don't have any other idea.
If it's the one from the movie.
The one that he hid out in?
Yeah.
All right. We're locked in.
Okay.
And I think Jeff caught my eye too.
All right, Matt. So I believe I actually had a gander through a very small town in which he spent much of his time later in life in Iceland. And I believe he may have died there as well. So that's what I'd like to go with, if you're okay with that.
Well, I have nothing better. I have never been to Iceland or wherever this was, so I'll take your word for it.
Okay. We are going to venture a guess and say Iceland.
Yep. We're saying Iceland as well.
Yes, it is Iceland. He was an Icelandic citizen by the end of his life after sort of being persona non grata in the US later in life. But yes, Iceland is the correct answer.
Thanks. And like all Fisher clan, he's buried in the Phallus Museum.
Yes, correct. I hope to die in Iceland one day, like next year.
It's relatively easy. Apparently tourists...
go too close to the waterfall.
I think more tourists accidentally die than there are murders in that country.
Fall into the fissure.
Funny Icelandic... Well,
I went to Iceland more than 10 years ago, I think it was, and one of the things that I remember was that there was a pub that had a funeral parlor attached to it. It was essentially a joint business. It was like pub/funeral parlor. So, yeah, you're talking about, it's easy to die in Iceland. I guess they're set up for it.
We have some listeners
to live and die in Reykjavik.
That's a good movie. I think we have some listeners in Iceland. So maybe you go there and one of them will do the favor of taking you out.
Yeah,
put you down.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Reach out to us. WLEpodcast@gmail.com.
For a certain Patreon level, you can put Ken down.
push Ken into self-loss.
That's fine.
All right, question number 3. Category is a worn-out recording. One-hit wonder Rupert Holmes had a 1979 hit with what song about a man who, while lying in bed with his partner, hatches a plan to cheat on her by advertising in the personal ads of a newspaper. Unbeknownst to him, his partner is also looking for a way out of the relationship and answers the ad, leading to a blind date between two people who are already in a relationship together. What is the title of this one-hit wonder? And I'll accept either the title or the bracketed subtitle that it's known by.
This is the Pina Colada song, right?
Absolutely, it is the Pina Colada song, which is the parentheses part that Ken doesn't want to accept. I can't remember what it's actually called. But you are definitely correct.
That's
it's
fine.
The Pina Colada song.
We can accept that. It's fine. Brandon said we're accepting it. So
I did say that, but I am happy to change the rules on the run and give a bonus for giving the full answer as well.
No, it's okay. It was predetermined. All right, so you're going Pina Colada song.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Escape, and I'm offended by the fact that being not into yoga was on his list. Like, geez, man, relax.
Yeah, it's the Escape brackets the Pina Colada song, and one of the things I love about this song is like I'd always heard it and thought that the singer has this romantic kind of thing. He must kind of look like Fabio or something. But if you actually find there's a YouTube video of him singing it live on TV. And he's this guy with glasses and a beard and a sweater and a polo shirt underneath. He looks exactly like your sort of eighth grade science teacher or something.
He does not look a day of yoga in his life.
No, that's right. Does not look like the man who sings this song. And also just the fact that the song is about this couple who are essentially trying to cheat on each other. It's like it's just such a bizarre plot. Anyway,
this guy looks like he would sell you some drugs.
Yeah.
He looks like he'd either sell you some drugs or he's a book salesman for coding. I thought for some reason this was what's his name? Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy I never Buffett. Knew it was someone
oh,
else.
No, it's definitely someone else.
Yeah. It's definitely
Rupert Holmes and actually quite an interesting guy, and one of the reasons I wanted the Gilbert Gottfried read was on Gilbert's podcast, he interviewed Rupert Holmes at one point, and it's a really, really interesting episode, all the things that Rupert Holmes has done in his life. So actually worth a listen.
Oh, sweet.
Door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman.
All right, number 4. The category is My Humps. As you may know, camels can have either one hump or two. A one-humped camel is a dromedary, which is easy to remember because if you were to turn the camel 90 degrees, its back would look like the letter D. Conversely, a two-humped camel is what species that is named for an ancient region of Central Asia?
Locked in.
Nice.
I think these are Bactrian camels, Matt. Is that, yeah, does that track?
Makes sense. I'm not too up to date on camels that are not Joe Camel, so I'll take your word for it.
Are you up to date on Joe Camel?
Well, he's retired, so.
Oh, okay.
What's he up to today?
Still trying to sell cigarettes.
He's on the ventilator.
Probably
get you to vape now. Probably.
So you guys are going on Bactrian?
Yes.
Okay. You said Bactrian as well.
Yep. The correct answer is Bactrian, and I just love that you can, if you can't remember which one is which, yeah, the Bactrian looks like a bee on its side with the two humps. The dromedary looks like a D. So it's an easy way to remember it.
That's how I will remember it.
Yeah. One of those things somebody told me, and I was like, oh, great. I'm never going to forget that again. All right. Question five. A hat trick of successes. Born in Hawaii in 1920, Harold Sakata was a successful weightlifter who won a silver medal for the USA at the 1948 Olympics before also becoming a popular professional wrestler in the 1950s. However, he is best remembered today for his razor-sharp performance in an iconic 1964 film. Name either the film or the character that he played.
No. We can lock in.
Okay.
So Matt and I were talking a bit about it. We obviously aren't catching the clue here, but we think something razor sharp might have been in Seven Samurai. So
okay. Although not, I think not a bad guess.
That's close.
What if I said that if you picked this character in a certain video game, I would claim you were cheating? Neil?
Yeah, we tip our cap to your trying to get the answer. Odd job from Goldfinger.
Oh, no way.
Yes, and the category name was a hat trick of successes. Yeah, it's Odd Job from Goldfinger. He was a weightlifting Olympic medalist in real life.
Amazing.
I did not know that. That's really cool.
Well, the scores are looking pretty good so far. So far, these have been right over the plate for us. We have 50 points at the Minnows and 40 points, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
40 points for the Jets.
So play it cool, and we'll see
real
how.
Real cool.
All right, let's move on to question six. The category is non-American sporting champions. Basketball star Steve Nash was born to a Welsh mother and an English father, was raised in Canada, holds joint Canadian-British citizenship, and played his entire career in the USA. But he was born in which other country, whose other sporting stars include golfer Ernie Els, cricketer Makaya Antini, and tennis player Amanda Kurtzer?
Neil, I'll leave it to you.
I think I know where Ernie Els is from. We can lock in.
Is this South Africa, Matt?
I believe Ernie Els is South African, yeah.
Okay,
cool. I don't know about the other ones, but I'm pretty sure. And I had no idea that Steve Nash was born in South Africa. That's crazy.
Okay, we got one South Africa.
Yeah, and I remember speaking of the shark when I was a kid. I used to have a lot of Greg Norman stuff and other golfers. I was like, oh, this one's from South Africa. And it was Ernie Els. That's what we said, South Africa.
Yeah, the correct answer is South Africa. I didn't know whether that would be a well-known fact that Steve Nash was born in South Africa, but he was born in Johannesburg. Yeah.
Wow.
It was not. We both got it on the merit of one of the hints, I guess.
Well, I'm glad I threw in a few hints anyway then.
What a world traveler that never traveled on the court.
Yeah. All right. Question number seven. One thing John Lennon couldn't do. Ringo Starr was not necessarily the most visionary member of the Beatles, but in 1991, he was the first member of the group to do what? The remaining living Beatles, Paul and George, would both go on to do this over the following decade.
Well, Ringo, this is 91. I think that's around the time of Thomas, right? Would this be maybe like win a daytime Emmy or be nominated or be on a kid's show?
George didn't have too much time after that, only a few years, because I think he passed in like 94. I don't know if that helps you at all, but
well, he said George and Paul would do it later. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
So decade. this could be Ringo was on The Simpsons and Paul and George were later on The Simpsons. And I think that might be the answer. And I'm wearing a Simpsons shirt. I think it's a pier on the Simpsons.
I'm good with that.
That's not a bad guess. I'm thinking it's be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame times two.
Interesting couple of answers there. And the correct answer is appear on the Simpsons.
What? Yeah.
Great poll.
Ringo was
first. Marge would draw pictures of him and send it to him. And that was when he was on it.
Yeah, she wrote him letters in like the 60s, and then he finally got around to answering them like 2 days later.
Yeah. That's great. I hung it on me wall.
I wonder, has Ringo been inducted twice? I wonder.
I think so.
For the Friends band?
In recent years, perhaps. But
I'd imagine.
It's just interesting because back in those early Simpsons days, you had a lot of celebrities not wanting to put their name to it, to the show. But Ringo was like, yep, no, I'll do it. I'm looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
All right, question eight. It's all in the name. In 2018, who became the first Australian driver to win the Indianapolis 500 race? He shares his full name, that is, first name and surname, with a trait that he would have needed in order to win the race. One of Merriam-Webster's definitions of this particular trait is a strong determination that allows one to do something difficult.
Jeff, you're into the cars a little bit, right?
I have I'll lock in a guess if you don't think you've got it. This is kind of a joke, but I think it works. So if he's Australian, that would be the thing that's surprising to me because the rest of it does fit.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, so my thinking was the movie Rush, which is pretty underrated, but I remember Chris Hemsworth is Australian, but he was playing a Brit.
Mm.
And I was thinking who that guy was, but he's a Brit. He's not Australian. So I like your answer. So,
yeah, just based on the definition, I think the guy's name has to be Will Power.
Oh, you snakes. Yeah, Will Power is in fact a racing driver.
I'm not going to get a wordplay thing.
And that's what we guessed, Will Power.
Yes, Will Power is correct. And he is Australian, first Australian to win the Indianapolis 500. All right, question nine, American geography. What is the only one of New York City's five boroughs that is located predominantly on the U.S. mainland?
It was a Neil question.
I'm pointing to the first base umpire here.
We can lock in.
Okay.
Predominantly on the U.S. mainland. So,
is that where famous original sales is?
I don't know. But I know, so Staten Island is an island, so I would imagine... Not on the mainland.
Probably, yeah.
Manhattan is an island, right?
Yeah. I was thinking Brooklyn.
I was too,
but there's a bridge.
Because
maybe it's a bridge out of there.
Yeah, it could be the bridge to Manhattan from there, because Queens and the Bronx are both on Staten Island, right? So I think you're right with Brooklyn.
Yep. Let's go Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is the biggest. But I believe you'd have to take the 6 train like J-Lo to the Bronx.
Yeah, the correct answer is the Bronx because Brooklyn and Queens are both on Long Island.
Oh, I had it backwards.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about this, there's another just fact that I like here, which is why I included the question. I had to say predominantly on the U.S. mainland because there's a tiny part of Manhattan that's also on the mainland. It's called Marble Hill. And I just really like this fact. It was originally essentially the northern tip of Manhattan Island until they built the Harlem Ship Canal through, which cut it off from Manhattan Island. And then what they did was they filled in the river that was to the north of it, which actually joined it up to the mainland. So there's this little section that was originally part of Manhattan Island, then it became an island of its own, and then it got joined to the mainland, and it's still part of Manhattan officially.
Not such a simple tale, as it turns out. All right, let's get the last question of round one.
Category is three people who have never been in my kitchen. What is the specific connection between the 39th president of the USA, the man who assassinated Martin Luther King, and the legendary American actor who played Hoak the chauffeur in the 2013 Australian theatre tour of Driving Miss Daisy?
Okay, me and Neil put our heads together and we're locked in.
So the 39th president of the U.S. is Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
MLK's assassin was James Earl Ray. And I'm sensing a pattern here because I think Jimmy Carter's middle name is Earl, which makes me mm-hmm. think that maybe James Earl Jones was the actor. So maybe these are all James Earls.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. All that works, and we can lock in with that.
Yeah, we had the similar discussion. I only went from it from the actor angle, gave Ken James Earl Jones, and he reasoned that the others had James Earl in their names.
Yeah, you took a bit of thinking time, but you all got there in the end. Yeah, James Earl Carter is Jimmy Carter's real name. James Earl Ray was the assassin, and James Earl Jones, I was lucky enough to go and see him and Angela Lansbury in The Driving Miss Daisy theatre production here in Melbourne, which was nearly 10 years ago. But yeah, what a that cast. Was pretty cool. Yeah,
that's a great that cast. Wow. And then yep. She solved a murder of of the chauffeur.
That's right. Yeah. All in one.
All right. Well, that concludes the first round. Very strong showing by both teams. The Minnows up 90-80.
Yeah, and Bryden is a Patreon supporter, like we mentioned. So if you'd like to join him and help supporting the show, we'd very much appreciate it. One of our Patreon supporters, who is also Australian, but from Sydney, not Melbourne, Jasper Bruce, he's been on the show before.
Let's go Swans.
Yeah, he reached out to us. Actually, our book is on the way from Bryden, but he sent us a wonderful picture of a little passage Bryden wrote about us, which really touched our hearts. So we appreciate that, Bryden, that you put us in your book.
No, absolutely, yeah. Jasper, actually, he's been on The Chase, I believe, as well, as a contestant. Yes, there's a little section in the book where I talk about just all the different ways that, you know, people engage in trivia and online quiz leagues and all sorts of things. And, yeah, I talk about podcasts and you guys and Trivial Warfare being the two that I sort of have really stuck with over a long period of time. And I wanted to sort of express that, you know, having the chance to, you know, go on the show and host, and you guys are there in Chicago, I'm here in Melbourne. It just shows how things like trivia, a hobby like that, can just bring similar minded people together from all around the world. And, you know, it feels like we're all friends in the triviality community, even though most of us have never met. So thank you guys for creating that.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. And thank you for mentioning that. And that's all thanks to our patrons, including you. So if you'd like to join Bryden, you can go to patreon.com/trivialitypodcast and keep the connections growing.
Just want to say
that... If you want to write about us in your book, you can do that too. Anyone else is writing a book?
I just want to say we recently fulfilled a wager where Matt and I joust with baguettes, and it is needlessly overproduced. And I'm very proud of it. The direction that went into it and the time spent for what ended up being about a minute and a half is much more than you could imagine. But we had a lot of fun with it.
There's some wonderful split diopter shots.
Yeah. Neil did a great job with the edit, and couldn't be more proud of something so incredibly stupid, which I think if we had a second tagline would be that.
Yeah,
so.
And you can check that out on the Patreon exclusive.
Or all at right. The Cannes Film Festival. I believe we're submitting it, right?
Might see it at Cannes. Okay, well, that leads us into the swing round. What do we have today?
All right, for the swing round, I'm going to give you 10 clues, and following on from a question that involved Jimmy Carter, this is 10 clues where the answers are all also the surnames of US presidents. So you've got to fit a president's surname to each clue. I think most of these will be pretty gettable, but let's see how we go. Number one, the name of the band that had a 1995 hit with the song Glycerine. Number two, the name of the New York City neighborhood that is also called Hell's Kitchen. Number three, the name of a relay event in track cycling that is contested in the Olympics. Number four, the brand of tennis balls used at the US Open. Number five, the first word in the name of the main stadium at the US Tennis Open. Number six, any individual card from a suit that holds special high ranking in games such as euchre and bridge. Number seven, the car that fictional character Mickey Haller notably uses in a series of novels. Number eight, the city in which you could find the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Number nine, the most famous creation of Jim Davis. And number 10, a somewhat old-fashioned slang euphemism for the male genitalia.
All right, that's all we wanted to hear, and we will be right back with our answers.
Ooh, I don't know. The question is, which president was that?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All answers are now locked in, so let's hear the clues one more time and see how we did. I think we did pretty well.
Pretty well.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty good. All right. The first one was the name of the band that had a 1995 hit with the song Glycerine.
Bush.
Yep, big fan of Gavin Rossdale. I said Bush.
Yes, that's Bush is correct. Number two, the name of the New York City neighborhood that is also called Hell's Kitchen.
We went with Clinton.
We discussed Clinton, but then we knew that Washington Heights was a place, so we said Washington.
And Clinton is the correct answer there.
Yeah, they've been trying not to call it Hell's Kitchen forever, but it just stuck.
Yeah, that's right. Number three, the name of a relay event in track cycling that is contested in the Olympics.
By far the hardest one, and not sure if we got it. We just went with Ford.
We too said Ford.
Interesting that you're both gone with the same answer. It is not the correct answer. The correct answer is they cycle race is called the Madison.
Okay.
And I believe it's called that because it was first contested at Madison Square Gardens.
Okay.
Number four, the brand of tennis balls used at the U.S. Open.
Wilson.
Yep, we assume this is probably Wilson's.
Yes, it is Wilson's, and the first word in the name of the main stadium for the U.S. Open.
I think it's Arthur Ashe Stadium, so we said Arthur.
Yeah, we agree. It is Arthur Ashe Stadium, so we said Chester A. Arthur.
Yes, Arthur is correct. Any individual card from a suit that holds special high ranking in games like Euchre and Bridge?
Trump.
Yeah, I was writing questions about Euchre because I can never remember how to actually play the game, but I know that Trump cards are very important in them.
They are indeed, yes. It's Trump is correct. The car that fictional character Mickey Haller notably uses in a series of novels.
It's a Lincoln. It's the Michael Connelly Extended Universe.
We figured since Neil seemed very enthusiastic about the question, that it had to be a Lincoln.
Yes, it's the Lincoln Lawyer series. And I knew that Neil was into that series, and so am I. I think they're just wonderful books, really. They're just so readable. The city in which you'd find the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Drew Carey would claim that it rocks. We said Cleveland.
Indeed, thank you, Matt. That is the exact flavor text I would have added.
The most famous creation of Jim Davis.
Well, with Garfield.
You would know. Hater of Mondays. Yeah, we said Garfield.
Yep, absolutely. Garfield is correct. And a somewhat old-fashioned slang euphemism for male genitalia. I was hoping that there might be some other options that could sound interesting here, but I think it was one that you
good choice
nailed down pretty easily.
It was a good choice, Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we weren't really sure on this one, so we just went with the Lucky Johnson.
Yes, correct. Very well done. So the Madison the one that tripped you up.
It was the only one that got both of us. So
yeah.
How many did you get? 40?
Yeah, so our team got 40 points, 8 correct in that round, bringing our score to 120 points. And I believe you guys added 45 to extend your lead to 135?
Correct.
Excellent.
Let's proceed.
All right, round two. This looks good on your resume. Nicola Heaton is the current holder, and Mohammed Sagir, Penny Griggs, and Brian Grocock are other recent holders of what official position in the UK? This is a position that has existed since the 15th century and is well known throughout the world, although the current job description, promoting the city as a destination for visitors, for short breaks, conferences, business, and shopping, does seem to have been watered down somewhat.
Matt, I think I've got a good answer if you won't trust me on this.
I trust you.
Okay.
Maybe.
I just wrote the watered down clue on my paper, and then Neil finished the alley-oop, and he wrote down
Beef Eater.
Oh, Beef Eater is a great answer. I think that these were all the Right Honorable Lord Mayor of the City of London at one point.
Both good guesses, and unfortunately you went searching for a clue where I hadn't actually intended to put one in. I'm sorry about that. This position is Sheriff of Nottingham. Question two, character connections. Vera Peterson, Stan Walker, and Bob Saccomano. What is the most notable characteristic shared by these sitcom characters?
Oh, I think we can lock in.
All right, these fellows locked in right away. I think Bob Saccomano is from Seinfeld, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
What situation? Yeah. Was he the dentist?
No, that's
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston, but his name was oh god,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Bob Saccomano. Can you remember that? I just read about Bob Saccomano. He's not on the show, I don't think. They just talk about him. My friend Bob's, oh, it's Kramer. Kramer talks about him. My friend Bob Saccomano or whatever. He says, I bet they don't appear. They're only talked about. That's okay. My guess.
All right.
Dr. Tim Whatley, for the record.
Tim Whatley. Yeah. Antidentite. Or no, Jerry's Antidentite.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Vera is Norm's wife, who's never on the show. I think you could probably throw Maris into this from Frasier, but these are characters that were mentioned but never seen on the show.
Yeah, that's right. Unseen characters, essentially, for all intents and purposes, never seen. I think Vera Peterson in Cheers, you do see her sort of without Shadow. Seeing her face at some point, but you certainly never see
back
their faces.
Or something, yeah,
So she's Norm's wife, who he's always complaining about. Bob Saccomano is Kramer's friend, who is always up to some sort of scheme, but you never see him. And Stan Walker in Will and Grace, he is Karen's husband, who never seen as well. So well done, got there. Question three, the former Soviet Union. There are currently 15 independent countries that were previously part of the Soviet Union. The two most populous are Russia and Ukraine, but which country is third on the list with approximately 35 million people? This nation also pops up in trivia due to being one of only two countries in the world that is double landlocked.
Oh. Jeff's got this one locked in. Poor Jeff.
Yeah, we're good.
Was it the double landlocked? Was it Kazakhstan?
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Or Uzbekistan? No, I think Kazakhstan because the population's huge. We're going to go with Kazakhstan. Sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good with me. Very nice.
Ken, you should have stuck with your original guess. We're going to Uzbekistan.
Yes, it is Uzbekistan. It's actually surprisingly high population. I thought Kazakhstan would be much higher, but Uzbekistan is third after Russia and Ukraine.
You said 35 million?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's Kazakhstan single landlocked?
Yes.
Okay.
I still don't understand landlocked when you all talk about it, but I just nod like I do.
Okay. I'll explain it to you after this.
At bedtime, please. Yeah.
And Jeff, can you remember the other country in the world that's double landlocked?
Liechtenstein.
Correct.
Oh, you have to pay for that, Jeff.
No bonus points.
To pay for it.
Question four. The category is footwear. Advertising executive Henry Nelson McKinney is often credited with coming up with what name in 1917 for a particular type of shoe? Grandpa Simpson could tell you what this term is and why.
Where's the Simpsons thing coming in here? Abe Simpson, what does he know?
He knows a lot.
Yeah. Because it was, he had a tiny onion on his belt because it was the style of the time. I don't know if this has anything to do with onions. Probably not. Maybe it's like sneaker. Maybe it's like gym shoe. So I don't think we have anything on the Abe Simpson thing, which is unfortunate. But what about
gym shoe,
sneaker, or gym shoe? Maybe he said that these shoes are to be used in the gym. There's more indoor gyms at the time, possibly.
Yeah, gymnasiums were a thing that were starting to come around then. Yeah, people were really into that. I buy it.
Yeah, let's go gym shoe.
As the listeners know, I know nothing about The Simpsons, but I was trying to think of shoes that were very, very old. And thankfully, Bryden had a clue in the question. Like all of his questions today have been great. And he said coining. And I said, what about a penny loafer? So that's what we locked in with.
Well, unfortunately, no points here. That was a very good answer. But there's a Simpsons episode where there's a cat burglar named Malloy, and and Grandpa Simpson works out who it is because he wears sneakers for sneaking.
Wow. Oh,
sorry, Matt.
It was sneakers.
I felt good about that too.
I felt good about it too.
Number five. Memorable dates. The earliest known Christian era coin to feature the date printed on it is a Danish coin dated what year? I think Coolio wrote a song about this, although he really should have subtitled it Somepin' Old.
Based on the Coolio clue, I think I know it.
Okay. I'm going to trust you.
I just keep thinking of the number 1994, but that's just like one of his lyrics, so it's not going to help us out.
Is there a Coolio song that's coming to mind?
No.
Something new?
It's probably, I mean, I remember buying a Coolio album that had no parental advisory on it, and I returned it because I wanted the swearing when I was in like fifth grade. And
yeah. So you got nothing, Neil?
I have nothing.
All right. We got to tap out, or we'll say 1994.
Yeah,
like
sure.
Like you wanted.
Okay, well, the Coolio clue was he had a song called 1, 2, 3, 4 in which he wanted you to get someone on the floor afterwards. So 1234, I'm guessing, is the year.
Sounds good to me.
Yes, Matt picked up on the clue very nicely. The year is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1234. That happens to be the first year that that a coin has the year dated on it, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's what I was singing in my head, but I didn't even put that together that it would be 1234.
Yeah, that's why I asked you to slow down and think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, because that was the dare video we posted at the end of the one episode where I'm singing. I'm going 1, 2, 3, 4, put your guns on the floor. It was a dare.
I asked you what
drugs.
The song was called.
I know.
And you refused to tell me.
So it was,
I couldn't think of the name of the song.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, brackets, something new is the actual name of the song.
Yeah. Got to get your drugs up off the floor. You got to get up to get down.
All right.
So it looks like
get up or get down, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Score update. Yep.
It looks like team the Jets picking up 30 points there, bringing their total to 150. And this has not been a good first half of a second round for us. We only picked up 10 points, and now there's a lead change because we're only at 145.
All right. Question six. Your category is mysterious characters. One of the most famous characters in 20th century literature. Which character, featured in 33 novels and more than 50 short stories, was described by his author and creator as a detestable, bombastic, tiresome, egocentric little creep, and when killed off by the author in 1975, became the first fictional character to be the subject of a front-page obituary in the New York Times?
We are locked in.
Poirot.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right.
Well, I was thinking it wasn't Sherlock, because
no,
I think Conan Doyle would have passed long before 75 to write him off. but I don't know about Agatha Christie. Yeah. Do you want to just go with Poirot?
Yes, let's go with that. And plus, Neil locked in right away. He's a big fan.
Yeah, the final book, Curtain, Agatha Christie wrote when she was younger and put it in a drawer and kept it there. So that way her sanity, her whatever you want to call it, her writing skills wouldn't deteriorate by the time she wrote the final novel. And we said Poirot.
Yes, the answer is Hercule Poirot.
He dies in the last one?
Yeah.
I mean, look, spoiler alert, but it is.
He has one final case. Years ago.
His own.
His own, yeah. Actually, I haven't read that one. I'm saving it to be the last one.
Solve the case as a ghost?
Yeah. He's so good. He's so good that he solves it anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm saving it. So.
Hercule Poirot's hardest case yet. His own.
Sounds like a CBS miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Certainly does.
Mon ami, je suis désolé. Question 7. Really, really, really old people. The oldest person ever with officially recognized birth documents was French woman Jeanne Calment, who died in 1997 at what age? And I'll give you 1 year either way.
I feel like we were discussing it, and I think it's like around that
period. Yeah. All right, we'll lock in.
Matt, I believe she was 121, approaching 122, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, and this one was semi-disputed as well, right, where there's some questions mom's birth certificate or something.
Yeah, I remember,
like
I think I brought that up on a previous episode, where it was potentially contentious, but I don't think it's ever been disputed.
We accused you of potentially slandering her for no reason, I believe.
Well, I think my favorite story is she claimed to have met Van Gogh and said he was like a horrid man or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going to guess 121.
We said 120.
Well, I gave you 1 year either way. The answer is 122. So 121 will score you a point because I'm generous. 120 doesn't quite get you there, sorry.
Couldn't remember if she was approaching or had passed 122.
Yeah. This is not good.
Tough round.
We were so close.
This is not good. We dominated through the whole game, and this is not good.
And we're like Poirot here on our last breath.
That's all right. He always brings it together in the end, doesn't he? So, you know.
He does. That's true.
It was high cholesterol.
He does love his sweets, so.
Mm-hmm. Question 8. Famous families. In 1965, American diplomat Henry Richardson Labouisse Jr. accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of UNICEF, of which he was the director. But Nobel Prizes were nothing new to his family. His late sister-in-law had already won a Nobel Prize. His late brother-in-law had already won a Nobel Prize. His late father-in-law and his late mother-in-law had both won Nobel Prizes. Into which famous family had he married?
Oh, I know this one.
Excellent. We shall lock in.
Locked in.
The Clooneys?
I'm more interested in knowing who the black sheep of the family was who did not win a Nobel Prize and they just were just a normal person.
Ha ha, Tom.
Yeah,
get your shit together.
Thanks for teaching kids in high school, Tom. This is a bad, I mean, I'm not good with science, but didn't the Curies, wasn't a husband and a wife both won a Nobel Prize?
They did, yeah.
I don't know if any other family members of them had.
We could say that. That's not a horrible idea.
Okay.
Because it knocks out two, at least.
Right, that's why I was trying to think of a multiple here.
I believe her daughter did win as well.
All right, we'll say Curie.
Her daughter won and joked that there were five winners in the family. It's the Curies.
It is the Curies, yes, that's right. So Pierre and Marie Curie won early in the 20th century. Their daughter, Irene, and her husband, Frederick, they won together for chemistry. And then Henry accepted for UNICEF. And who was the black sheep? Well, it was his wife, Eve Curie, who
useless.
Was the other daughter who didn't win a Nobel Prize. You know, I mean,
that is a Oscar bait waiting to be written. The other daughter, Eve Curie.
Yeah, that's right. I think she had the satisfaction though of outliving them all. If I'm remembering correctly. So,
well, there you go. She's cursed their name and threw out their Nobel Peace Prize.
So the movie's just called Eve.
Eve.
Dawn of
that's right.
Curie.
Not so noble now, Daddy.
Nobel.
Not so
Nobel now.
fact, I think she lived. I'm just going to look this up because I think she.
She's 123. She's the new oldest woman, I believe.
Not
it's almost always an old Japanese woman now.
She did live to be 102 years old.
Wow.
And so the other, you know, her parents, you know, died from, you know, radiation poisoning and all that sort of stuff.
Not being
so she really did have the last laugh, didn't she? She didn't die until 2007.
Hmm.
All right. Question 9. Twice the twain did meet. In 1909, correctly predicting his impending death, Mark Twain wrote, "I came in with blank in 1835. It is coming again next year, and I expect to go out with it. It will be the greatest disappointment of my life if I don't go out with blank. The Almighty has said, no doubt, now here are these two unaccountable freaks. They came in together. They must go out together." What fills the blank?
Matt, I know this. We can lock in.
All right.
In fact, I had it as a crossword clue earlier today.
I think it's the comet named after the lead singer of Paramore.
Shut up, Neil.
I think it's Halley's, not Halley, but I think it's Halley's comet. I think it's a comet, I think he talked about.
Okay.
Is that the one that comes around every like 30 years or whatever?
Something like that.
Something like that. I think
more than that.
But... I'm feeling juiced up right now. I'm feeling good. I'm not feeling good during trivia, but I feel pretty strong right now.
Did you just see Halley's comet?
I saw Hayley Williams do a cover of Dua Lipa, which made my mind explode.
All right.
Okay. I was not around the last time it came around, so. But yeah, we too said Halley's Comet.
Yeah, that is the correct answer. I was about 4 or 5 years old, I think, when it came around last time. So I do remember sort of standing outside the house and looking up and probably seeing it, I guess, with the family. But yeah, I think it's every, 76 years or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I just love that quote from Mark Twain. It's two unaccountable freaks must go out.
Whatever happened to him? Sounds like a good writer or something.
Whatever happened to him?
He died.
he died in 1910. Question number 10. Confusing terminology. What part of the human body shares its name with sailors' terminology for the toilet on a ship? It's also a part of your body from which you might be likely to pull this answer.
I mean, the sailor's toilet is the privy, right?
The privy?
I think you're privy to that answer.
Maybe. You would pull an answer out of your privy?
I mean, I've never heard that as a body part, but...
Or your privates, privy? It's not... Well, we know it's not poop deck. It's not... There's no ass end of a ship, right? Swat. That's not a term, ass end of a ship.
No, not the ass end, no.
Pull the ass end around!
I believe it's the stern.
Mm. You don't have to say it so meanly.
So sternly?
So sternly.
Yeah, we'll say the privy.
Privy.
Matt, I just think this is the head.
Oh.
Hitting the head. Right? Yeah. I believe they used to attempt to urinate off the front of the ship and hit the like statues that might have been carved into the front and the bow.
That's where that phrase comes from? I'm going to go hit the head?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Aiming to pee on the carvings, I believe.
Our we're not baking it up right now. You know what I'm saying, Neil? We're not baking right now.
We're not baking. You're right. We put the wrong amount of flour, that's for sure.
The privy is a toilet, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens when you try and cook with your ass end. So.
All right. Is it the head?
The correct answer is the head, and I said it's the only part of the body from which you might, you know, pull the answer, and Jeff correctly did that. He pulled the answer from his head. You guys tried to pull yours from somewhere else and got it wrong.
Just goes to show.
After regulation, it looks like team...
Jets.
No, what's our team name? Minnows.
The Minnows.
The Minnows, poor showing here. We're only at 175. We only picked up an extra 30 points there. And yeah, Team the Jets is in the lead right now with 200 points.
We needed a little extra energy to get going, but now that we're there, we're firing on all cylinders.
We're not baking right now.
Let's hope we don't fumble it away in the final.
Speaking of the final, what are the categories?
All right, the categories are, and these questions all relate in some way to little facts that come up in my book that I discuss for one reason or another.
And what's the title of your book again, Braden?
It is called The Quizmasters, available on Amazon and Book Depository, I believe, and I think there should be an ebook out probably around the time that this podcast comes out. First category is The Devil's in the Detail. Second, Yippee-ki-yay. Third, Non-American football. Fourth, the space race. And fifth, television settings.
Matt, we've been doing pretty well. I feel pretty good. Let's just go for it. What do you think?
100%.
All right.
100%.
I feel good about these categories on behalf of Neil. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these seem like they're in your category. So I think we too should go in on it.
All right. Let's go in. This is what I'm thinking. I think we just put all the eggs we have left into the bowl, mix it
basket.
Up. In the basket.
Oh, into the bowl.
Into
right.
the bowl.
With the flour.
With the flour and the sugar.
A little brown sugar, a little mm-hmm. vanilla extract.
Yep. Shake and bake, baby.
Shake and bake.
We're going to make one great Victoria sponge. So get ready.
All right, guys. Here is your first question in the final round. The devil's in the detail. Most Australians don't know it, but the shortest land border shared by any two Australian states is an 85-metre border on a rocky outcrop in the middle of Bass Strait. The result of a 19th century map-making error, this boundary is shared by my home state of Victoria and which island state? Yippee-ki-yay. The film Die Hard was based on a novel by author Roderick Thorpe. This novel was the sequel to an earlier book by Thorpe that had been adapted into a 1968 film called The Detective. As a hangover from that earlier film, the studio was contractually obligated to offer the role of John McClane to the actor who had starred in The Detective in 1968, which then 70-year-old superstar politely turned down the role. Third question is non-American football. Proposed by a historian in the 1970s to show which is the dominant football code in different parts of Australia, the Barassi line is an imaginary line that stretches roughly from halfway across Australia's north coast all the way down to the far southeastern corner of the country. In the geographical majority of the country, Aussie rules football is dominant, but in the heavily populated northeastern corner, which other football code is preferred? And I warn you that a one-word answer will not be enough. Question four, the space race. The first person to perform a spacewalk was Soviet cosmonaut Alexei Leonov, who did so in 1965. The alternative history TV series For All Mankind reimagines history to have Leonov also become the first person on the moon, which alters the space race dramatically. In real life, the first American to perform a spacewalk was which astronaut who died in the Apollo 1 fire and who shares his first name with the main astronaut character in For All Mankind, played by Joel Kinnaman. And question five, television settings. One of the most memorable moments in the early days of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in Australia was when the network brought in Richard Hatch for a celebrity special, only to have him bomb out at the $500 level when he was asked what was 11 times 12 and locked in 123. It was quite a come down for Richard Hatch, who just a few months earlier had won $1 million on the first season of Survivor, which was filmed in what country?
All right, we have the questions, and we will be back with our best answers.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. That tone means that the answers are in, and we will see how this goes. It is anybody's game. And just for the record, both teams have wagered 30s on all questions.
Yeah, teams have done pretty well today, so I'm not surprised by that. The first question, the devil's in the detail. The shortest land border in Australia, an 85-metre border in Bass Strait shared by Victoria and what island state?
The category is devil in the detail, so we got to go with Tasmania.
Well, we didn't even get that clue, but we know it's an island state, so we said Tasmania.
And yes, Tasmania is the correct answer. Question two was Yippee-ki-yay, the 70-year-old superstar who politely turned down the role of John McClane in Die Hard.
So some classic trivia here. We said Frank Sinatra.
And we also said old blue eyes, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra is correct. It would have been a very different movie, but I'd still have watched it if Frank Sinatra was John McClane.
Still walking over glass.
Yippee-ki-yay. Question three, non-American football. The looking for the two-word name of the football code that is dominant in the northeast of Australia.
So I couldn't remember if it's rugby union or rugby league. I know we spoke of Jasper earlier. He talked about covering this. I kind of said go with your gut. Union to me sounds like it's English, so we said rugby league.
Yeah, we were pretty sure that rugby union is the popular sport in New Zealand, so we went with rugby league.
Yeah, rugby union, very big in New Zealand. Less big in Australia. Rugby league is the correct answer. There's some slight differences, you know, 13 players versus 15. Little bit of, you know, differences in the scoring, but to a lot of outsiders, it would look like much the same sport. Question four, the space race. We're looking for the first American to perform a spacewalk who died in the Apollo 1 fire and who shares his first name with the main astronaut character in For All Mankind.
Well, this question might be the crux of the game. I've seen a couple movies about the space race, like First Man and The Right Stuff, and there's an explosion in it. I pulled the first name Gus, but I couldn't quite pull a last name except for the last name White. So we answered White.
And we did go with Gus Grissom, not knowing if that was the correct answer.
Very, very interesting. The character, played by Joel Kinnaman in For All Mankind, his name is Ed Baldwin, and the answer is Ed White.
Whoa. Oh,
wow.
Where did that
well
come from?
Pulled. That was a good get. And the final question, asking for the country in which the first season of Survivor was filmed, where Richard Hatch won $1 million.
We went with Borneo.
We too went with Borneo.
It was filmed in Borneo. I was going for the country because Borneo is not a country, but given that you both answered the same, it doesn't really make Malaysia. Any difference. The country is Malaysia. That's right.
Mm.
But you both answered the same, so it doesn't make any difference.
The final round is over, and it was tense. The Jets picking up 90 points, bringing their total to 290. And thanks to Ed White, and 150 points by the Minnows. The final score for the Minnows is 325, making them today's cream of the crop.
I'm talking about all the way to the top. Yeah.
The Minnow luckily outswam the shark. Just barely. Very, very lucky, though.
Barely with a little bit of speed.
But you know when you put that cake in the oven, you just let it rise? Sometimes the bakery works.
Just let it crystallize, get a little bit of the... nice color. This is the first time I think we've won ever.
That's not true.
As our team.
No, literally the last time we had a wager, Matt and I lost each other together.
Oh, that's true. I guess that is true. Yeah.
So the two of you have beaten us before.
So we're a pretty good team.
Yeah.
A groin-grabbingly good team, I would say, Matt.
Well, I think it all came down to Ed White, which was a pretty good pull from Ken.
Kind of amazing, yeah.
That was, I mean, Ken pulled it out there, so he knew it.
So people always wonder what Ken's special category is. It's clearly, you know, obscure
that
astronauts.
I can produce from my ass.
Yeah.
From your privy.
Yeah, from the privy.
Producing from the privy since 2017. So Bryden, thank you so much for being here, and you know how much we love you here. And according to Ken Jennings, he called your book Irresistible, a breezily written guided tour through the world of Australian quiz. So Ken Jennings thinks you're irresistible, just like we do. Thank you for hanging out with us. Sorry it took 3 years to get you back here. We'll have to get you back here much, much sooner. Maybe we'll have you play a game as well, but yeah. Or we'll just have you win a game.
I'd probably actually go badly depending on, you know, who was writing the game, because American sports, you know, this certain American pop culture I'd probably do pretty badly with. So I would keep my expectations low.
All right. Well, we'd love to have you back regardless. But you wrote your book, The Quizmasters: Inside the World of Trivia Obsession and $1 Million Prizes. And we're really looking forward to it coming. But you have 368 pages of your book, but in less than 368 pages, maybe just a few sentences. Any final words you'd like to give the listeners?
Oh, yeah. Look, I just hope that anyone who's into their trivia and quizzing will get something out of the book, because although it has a bit of an Australian focus, I think a lot of the themes of it are pretty universal, of that curiosity for knowledge that we all have in trivia, and finding quirky, interesting facts and liking to be a bit competitive with it as well. I really do think that there's a lot in there for anybody who's into that. It's I believe it's available on Amazon and Book Depository for US readers, and should be available as an ebook in the US probably by about the time this podcast comes out. If not, then within a few weeks. So keep an eye out for it. Thank you guys for having me on. I have loved listening to the show virtually since it started. I've been a very long time listener. And just really appreciate what you guys have created here. So thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for coming back and hosting a great game.
Yeah, and we're happy that you were finally able to meet Matt. He isn't a robot, so you've met him.
That's right. Although he's not in the same room as you, so there's clearly something going on.
Could just be.
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for today. Thanks again, Bryden, for the hosts Matt, Jeff, Neil, and myself. That was Triviality.
What's Alan Rickman's line from
"Kill you with a spoon"?
Oh, I can't remember what it is. Something with the spoon.
I don't believe that is in Nicola Heaton's current job description.
It's cut your heart out with a spoon or something like that. Yeah.